tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, what's going on? We back. I am back inside the studio, everybody. What's up? It's your boy, Danny Royce. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome inside the Black Actors Studio. We've been gone for a while. A lot has been going on in the world, but we are here. We back, and the conversation continues. I'd like to thank you all so much for joining me. We have an amazing guest starting off today. All right, you've seen him in All American, Lethal Weapon, Good Trouble, Bunny Man Vengeance. He is an award-winning actor, director, producer, all-around amazing talent. Please welcome, the Black Actors Studio is very proud to have Omari Washington. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great. And yourself, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm blessed. I am here. We are, you know, we back. I missed everybody. You know, it's been a long time. Had to take a step away and just really focus on some really important things going on. You got a lot of stuff going on. I can't wait to get in it with you. First off, I want to say congratulations on Gracefully Broken. It's doing amazing. I want to talk a little bit about that. As far as what is the story and the premise of Gracefully Broken, if you can tell us.
Gracefully Broken is about a guy who's on the verge of losing it all, his apartment, his relationship, everything. And he slowly slips into depression because of that. And while he's contemplating suicide, he crosses paths with the woman who could be his saving grace, hence Gracefully Broken.
Hey, man, that's what's up. And I'm excited. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I know you got a big premiere coming up soon, so we're getting more into that. But you know how we do here in the studio. We like to start off in the beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in Chicago, in Edgewater. Hey.
There we go. Edgewater in Chicago. That's what's up. So actually, you and I are both in Chicago right now, in different parts, obviously. And so this is incredible that we're in the same, you know, same state doing this. Not in LA, but we'll be getting back there, grinding as usual. So how was the family dynamics growing up in your household?
It was complex, to say the least. Growing up, my brothers and I, it was difficult because our father wasn't always there. So I had to be the father for all of us. And growing up, I used to watch my brothers, and I used to take care of them and just be there for them and love them the way that our parents could at the time, because they were away at work or they were busy, you know, with their responsibilities. And at times it was difficult because, me personally, I endured, you know, some abuse physically and emotionally, but I overcame that. And I love to encourage other people who might be in the same situation to keep going, because you could get through it. You got to go through it to get to it. So why not endure the pain, you know, so you can enjoy the fruit of your labor later and your success and all your hard work, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And you speak of, you know, verbal and physical abuse, things like that. How has that really affected your art and your voice during this time?
It affected me in many ways. Like now, it takes me a while to warm up to someone. Like I go to therapy, for example, because my communication skills weren't the best growing up, because I always used to stay away from everybody to hide my depression, to hide my sadness. So it took me years of learning these communication skills to be more effective in the field of acting. And even doing this interview right now raises my anxiety, but I'm all for it because it's for a great cause.
That's what's up. it's a lot of time, you know, obviously as artists, you know, our traumas and all that, it translates through our work. So what's a piece of work that you've done or recently or in the past that really, really, you know, translates this emotion, attachment to it, that you'd like to share with the world?
I would have to say Gracefully Broken. To me, this is my best work because this is something I hold close to my heart. While we were in the editing room for the final phase of my film, I got a phone call that one of my close friends committed suicide. And that was pretty heavy. But I also feel like that was used for inspiration. Like, I feel like my friend Matthew is blessing Gracefully Broken, you know, with his spirit in it. And he's allowing it to do bigger and better things than the visions that I had. You know,
right.
And God also blessed the film to be successful as well.
And that ain't that the truth. So you got all these credits, right? When you were growing up, were there anyone in particular that inspired you, right, or motivated you in this journey, in this entertainment industry?
Yeah, I have quite a few people. My friend Matthew, who passed away, he was one of the main reasons why I actually got to LA and got to live out my dreams. Him and his family let me stay with them in North Cal for a month while I was finding a place to live to settle in LA. So I appreciate that. So I look up to him, even though he's not here. He had a heart of gold, and he inspired me to live my life with that same perspective. And my Uncle Mike, he showed me tough love, but he was always there to give me that insight and knowledge, you know. Sometimes in the Black community, I feel like tough love is one's way of showing affection, you know. Yeah. But it might not be taken that way because it's so assertive and strong and passionate. Right. But now I understand it being older in my journey.
Right. When you moved to LA, what were some of the struggles that you ran into going to LA and actually pursuing your dream?
Knowing who to trust and knowing how to set up my network, not just network with anybody, because that's not going to get me anywhere, but network with people who are doing what I want to do. So the biggest obstacles were really finding out how to get started, like how to submit for auditions out in LA, or how to go to open calls, or what the basics of how to become a successful actor. That was a huge obstacle for me at first.
And how did you overcome these obstacles? I mean, of course, you know, finding a good tribe, as I always say, is extremely important. But how does one do that? How does one filter through all this, you know, the BS of LA, and really find themselves a group of like-minded artists or anything like that that will push them forward?
I would say don't go looking for it. I feel like the best opportunities come when you least expect it. You know, so at first I was so eager and hungry, not saying that I'm not eager and hungry still, but I move different now. Based on the conversations I have with people, I can already tell like who's going to be worth my time and who's not. It's kind of like a sixth sense as an actor, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. I definitely know what you're talking about on that one. So when you were younger, you had any type of shows or films or anything like that that you really were like, oh, okay, I want to do that. Did you always want to be an actor?
Not until about the age of 12. When I seen Glory, I was crying watching Denzel get whipped. Like,
it touched
my heart on a deeper level. And I was like, wow, I want to make people feel that emotion, you know, by my performance. And if you can do it on camera, wow, their energy must be so vibrant in person. And I want to be one of those heavy hitters in the game.
For sure. What were some of the, do you have any favorite TV shows growing up?
The Smart Guy.
Hey, come on.
Yeah, I always wanted to be as smart as that guy. He was so brilliant.
That was one of my favorite shows as well. And I actually, you know, had an incredible opportunity of interviewing John Marshall Jones on the show. which is incredible. Incredible guy. He's funny, very just genuine, and all around amazing guy. So we're going to talk about some of your first like heavy hitters. Okay. So you got All-American, Leap the Weapon, Good Trouble. And then of course, Bunny Vengeance, right? Which was kind of a different role for you. It was more of a, you know, a deranged, sadistic.
Yeah, it was far out there.
Right? And so it's very fun for us actors to step into these, you know, different characters and things like that, that's completely different than ourselves. So out of these, some of your credits and some of the things that you've been on, what was one of the most difficult roles for you to portray?
I would have to say Bunny Man Vengeance. Because I had to go to some really dark places in order to embody that character. And it was weird juggling all types of emotions during this journey of my character. And because he's loving, but he's also a psycho. Carl was psycho, but he can show you his heart. So he was always conflicted. And he was the mediator between the brothers. So he's like, hey, why are you guys fighting? But hold on, I'm going to go torture somebody real quick. Those are lots of people.
But it's fun, right? It's fun doing those, stepping into those shoes of that character. How was it being on the set of All American? What was one of your favorite moments of being on set?
Right before we started shooting my scene, I'm walking up to the set and the director's like, you know your lines, right? You ready? All right, cool. Yeah. I'm like, wow, I'm not nervous anymore.
You know your lines, right?
Yeah. What's something that put me on the spot.
What's something that you do to prepare, to memorize and to get into character before going on set?
I meditate. I start my day off with meditation, 15 minutes meditation with affirmations. I am the greatest of all time. I am validated. I am good enough to be on this set. And that energy helps me ground myself into the character and calm my nerves, because before that first shot goes up, it's so nerve-wracking, especially when there are like 100 people just sitting there watching you like.
So, right.
Yeah, that was my favorite moment. Right before we took that first take, the director was like, "You ready?"
and you're on, right?
Yeah.
No, you have an interesting story about the Lethal Weapon audition. And so yeah, let's hear about your story of how that all transpired.
So I auditioned for Lethal Weapon around that time, and I didn't hear nothing back for a few days. And so I'm like, I didn't get it. So one day I was picking up my brother from the airport, and while he's in the car, I get a call from my manager, like, Elizabeth Barnes wants to see you right now. Are you ready? I'm like, what? I just picked up my brother, literally from LAX. I'm like, you know what? Let's do it. I'm ready. You gotta be ready at all times. So this is my opportunity. So while I'm driving to the callback, I'm running lines with my brother, and he's running lines with me. So before I even get to the location, I'm off book. I make sure I'm off book. I switch up my clothes, throw some jewelry on, look more gangster, you know. Hey. In there, confident. I do my first take. She's like, okay. She gives me a redirect. Elizabeth Barnes gives me a redirect.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, all right, cool. I took my time, took a deep breath. I'm like, all right, cool. And I performed. And all she said after I performed was like, yes, yes, yes. And after that, I was like, oh, we got it, bro. We got it.
That immediate validation, right?
I love it. Yeah, because you rarely get that in auditions.
Right, you do. Yeah, you're left wondering, but it just shows you that, you know, you got to be ready, you know, at all times, because you never know when your opportunity is going to come, right? And so with this whole you know, with COVID and the, you know, all this, the quarantine, it's changing the industry, right? Things are never going to be the same. However, we just got to keep pushing forward and keep creating content and keep doing what we love to do. How has this quarantine affected your progress in anything that you do?
It actually didn't slow me down. It helped me in so many ways. Like it helped me to be more self-aware on how I treat people and the energy that I put out into the world. And also like the preparation that I take for each role. Things have slowed down. Like it really has me going back to the basics, you know? And I feel like that's what it's all about, is sticking to the basics sometimes. You don't have to be complex and over the top. You mm-hmm. can, this is more in a lot of cases. So I feel like this pandemic process has enriched me as a person, as an actor, as all around, as everything.
Right. Yes. COVID-19 has, you know, like I said, it's going to change the industry as far as auditioning processes, right? We are not going to be entering in a lot of rooms anytime soon. So has this like made you up your self-tape process? Like how are things going as far as that producing an audition now? Because it's a lot of things are virtual and it's going that way. And it's going to be that way for a little bit.
I feel like this is a huge advantage for us actors at the moment because we can do as many takes as we want.
Right.
They don't know, you know, so we can use this to our advantage. And I feel like, it's better this way in a lot of cases, because most times you only get one take in the audition room. You're like, that wasn't my best take. Can I redo it? And most of the time they don't let you because they see so many people. So I feel like now that we can do it at home, we can, our work can be at a better level.
Right. For sure. And there's all in auditioning. What are some techniques that you use in your auditions process? We talked about a little bit about, you know, getting off book and things like that. But as far as like the choices that you make and the research, your homework, so to speak, what are some of the things that you do for some of those actors or aspiring actors that are listening right now?
On the way to the audition, that's when I do my affirmations. I deserve to be here. I am a great actor. They want me. They invited me, so they must mm-hmm. see something in me, right? When I get to the audition room, I close my eyes, take a super deep breath, and I don't worry about anybody around me because I feel like there's a lot of nervous energy in the audition rooms a lot of the time. So it's good to just, you know, focus on the moment you're having before you enter the audition room, because realistically, the audition starts once you leave your house, you know? So I feel like it's best to be in the character's groove and to feel what the character's feeling. And once you get in that room, once you slate, be yourself. And then after that, you know, jump back into the character and stay zoned and really connect with your reader.
Yeah. What's someone you would really love to work with?
Oh, Denzel, for sure.
Hands down, Denzel.
Hands down. And not because his last name's Washington, okay?
That part. Well, I do want to take this time to also thank you again for joining me on this interview as we bring Inside the Black Actors Studio back. It's so exciting to be here and talking and having these conversations. Also want to have a big shout out to Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro for allowing me to come in and have these amazing conversations with this awesome talent and bring them to you. And thank you for everyone who's watching and continue to support. I totally appreciate it. And I want to move into now Immortal Call. So tell us a little bit about Immortal Call and the premise and where you got that idea from.
Well, essentially, Immortal Call is an idea that John Thomas and I created as his executive producers. Originally, the film was supposed to be for the AT&T short film contest.
Yeah.
So we had to create this idea within a day or so for the contest, and it can only be 5 minutes long. But for this film, we felt like 5 minutes wasn't enough.
Okay.
And Emoticall is about a group of fighters who's fighting robots who have been rewired, and they turn bad, per se. And we have to, we're the last fighters, the last group of fighters to fight these bad robots, and we have to conquer them to save the world.
Hey. So, I mean, it's a sci-fi, and it had a lot of adventure. We don't really see, you know, a lot of people of color represented in that genre, right? We just got Vagrant Queen came out, which has the first leading black female on sci-fi, which is amazing. So we're making, you know, we're having steps towards that. How important is it to you that we are represented in all genres and every facet of this industry?
Is very important, especially right now. This is the time for change, and this is a time to rewire the system. And by that, I mean, it has to be changed where it starts, you know, where the foundation was built. So it's deeper than just black actors being cast in black films or other films. I feel like it goes back to systemic racism. You know,
they
go hand in hand in the sense in this industry, you know, because being black, you know, I feel like we don't get the same chances as other races sometimes. And that may not be fair. And we don't have access to the same opportunities.
Right. Right. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And you know, you're doing an amazing job of bringing light to this situation, and also allowing your voice to be heard. And also with Living and Loving Life Productions, I want to talk about that, your production company. How did that get started? And Living and Loving Life, so L3. the birth of that production company come about?
Well, I knew I wanted to inspire people, but I didn't know how until I initially moved out to LA. And that's when I was like, I'm not trying to wait on phone calls. I'm not trying to be that guy that's thirsty, per se, for an opportunity. So I wanted to create opportunities for myself and other people as well. And I also wanted to put the message out there that you can live and love your best life on your terms.
Yeah. Yes, that is so true. And so you have produced, you know, various projects under L Cube. Can I call it L Cube?
You can say L3. L3.
L3. Okay. what's one of your, would you say Gracefully Broken is one of your best work being produced under your company?
Definitely. And shout out to the team that I had for Gracefully Broken. Without them, this film wouldn't be a hit like it is now. And your team matters, you know, in this process. And that's why I shout them out, because I appreciate them, and it wouldn't have been the same without them.
Yeah, and you say your team matters, and it really does, because, you know, as we go back to it all the time, I always talk about your tribe, building a good tribe and all that. But your team really has to believe in you, and you work into a common goal. So, and that brings us to, you know, our community. You know, if we want to see change, we want to change the narrative, like you said, and it's deeper than just putting some color in front of the camera, right? It's behind the camera. It's who's signing the checks. It's who's in charge of these studios. you know, a lot, those are a lot of changes that we want to see and need to make happen. So it's extremely important for us all to work together to get to that goal, right? What's something that really inspires you right now that's out, that's a Black collaborative that's out right now that really is like, really got your attention?
That's a good one. That's a good question. I would say Snowfall.
What was that?
Snowfall would have to be one of them. Yes, yes. Snowfall, John Singleton did an amazing job with that.
Rest in peace, project. Yes. Awesome. Rest in power, that king, like, amazing. And prime example of what I was just talking about, you know, you got John Singleton, you know, you got Spike Lee, Ice Cube, Morris Chestnut, all these people who came up together, right? So that's what we all need to do. A lot of people like to work higher, right? But you need to work laterally and then bring each other higher. And I think you're doing a great job at that, with your projects, with everything you got going on. It's such a critical time right now. We've seen a lot of things, right, in the past months. We've been out there on the front lines. We've been voicing our concerns and things like that. How do you think this is going to change the future of our industry? The Black Lives Matter movement.
I feel like there's going to be more opportunities now than ever for Black folks, because now there's the awareness is raised to an all-time high. Like, it's everywhere. Like, this issue is everywhere, and we've been dealing with it for so long. So I feel like the tables will turn in our advantage with this whole situation. It may be ugly now, but when the smoke clears, we'll have the final say.
Okay. All right. I feel you. So what are some things that you're working on right now, Amari, that you're excited? Have you used this quarantine time to work on any, or to construct new projects or anything like that? What's going on with you?
Yeah, my friend Mir Najibi and I wrote a TV pilot called Sous Chef. It's about a chef who wants to be the next Food Network star, well, Yum Network star. And the executive chef at his job doesn't believe in him, but he has what it takes. He has the skills and everything, but his boss doesn't believe in him. So he faces so many adversities while trying to get to that network position.
Okay, nice. And then, so you also been a chef in the past, correct? You went, you studied culinary, all that stuff. So that's what inspired this project, right?
Yes. I've always loved cooking. Since 2009, I graduated Le Cordon Bleu. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, my passion for cooking has been so deep. And I was thinking, like, how can I incorporate that world with the acting world? So I was like, perfect, create a cooking series, TV series.
Perfect, right? So what are, because, you know, we got a lot of people are creating content right now. You know, we have so many, you know, streaming platforms, right? You've also got new things coming out, like, you know, like TikTok that's been around for a while, but it's really booming. People are creating little skits, different scenes, different series, things like that, which is an incredible time to hop on board and just be creative and use your imagination. Do you see it becoming an issue with just so much content that people are overwhelmed? Do you see that ever becoming an issue?
I don't, because you can tell, like, who's a TikToker, like, who does this every day and who wants to get clout from that, you know? And you can tell who's a serious actor. Me personally, this is just my opinion. I feel like serious actors don't have time to be on TikTok and don't do all these other social media apps. Like, it's too much. Like, just focus on the work, you know? Focus on the quality of work, and that will get you to where you need to go.
I hear that. What are some the biggest, I would say, what are some of the biggest advantages of producing your own work and some of the biggest disadvantages of producing your own work?
You got the good questions today.
Hey, you know.
Some of the disadvantages are having to juggle so much on my plate and still also give the performance I want the audience to see and be committed to that performance. I've learned recently that it's better to have individual positions rather than you wearing 3-4 hats at one time.
Right, you know? Right. Definitely.
It doesn't serve you justice if it's written by you, directed by you, starring you, produced by you, you know?
We can name a couple people like that.
I can say, though, the advantage is writing my own roles that I want to play, you know, that I'm not getting auditions for. So it's a huge upper hand, and I love to play that hand, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For someone who's just starting out and producing, what would you say is the most critical step of the process? You know, obviously, you've got scouting for locations, you got budgeting, you've got casting, all these different elements, right? What's for you is one of the most critical components of the process?
The pre-production meeting is so important, because if that pre-production meeting isn't executed correctly, best believe that on set you're going to have multiple headaches. That's a given. Yeah. So, you know, the pre-production meeting, in my opinion, sets the tempo for the rest of the process for that project.
Gotcha. That is true. Save yourself the headaches. No one needs that, right? What are you hoping to accomplish during this time and using your platform during this time and that everything's going on? What are you hoping to accomplish and show Black people in a different light? Like, what do you want to bring to the table saying, this is who we are and this is what we can do?
I want to bring a different flavor, because I feel like we're not, as Black folks, we're not just strong, you know, we're more than that, and we're versatile, and we can cater to so many different roles. But I want to bring awareness through my work that it is possible to cast a Black lead as a let's say a lawyer. You don't see too many Black lawyers, you know?
Right.
So I feel like it's up to us to create these roles and to keep each other in mind when we're casting these roles.
Right. Were you enraged at all or anything? What were the emotions you were feeling in the past couple months when everything transpired, all the, you know, the rioting, the looting, just the peaceful protesting, and also just being attacked by those who, you know, want to continue to oppress? What were some of your emotions, and how did that translate through your art?
Ultimately, I felt sad, because there's only so much we can do, right? Like, we can go protest and we could do all that, and that takes time, and that's great, and we're moving in the right direction. But ultimately, I felt sad because I felt like I wanted to do more, but I didn't necessarily know how in the most effective light, you know?
Right.
For example, I went to go protest one day, but due to my health conditions, I can't be around a lot of people. And with this whole COVID-19 thing going around, like, I have to be safe. So I want to be out there protesting every day, but it breaks my heart that I can't. So I try to, like, post on my social media and raise awareness that way.
Right, exactly. And there are different, you know, there are different lanes and different things you could do. Like, everybody's got to be out on the front lines. They can you know, spread, educate, you know, do all these things. There's so much we can do, especially as artists, because now is the time to really, you know, really, like I was saying, just translate this through art. In history, some of the greatest, you know, spikes of art has been times of oppression and times of, you know, injustice. And, you know, throughout history, this is when we've seen a rise of just beautiful pieces of art that really translate the emotions of the artist and just the people in general. I'd like to thank you so much for joining me again. And this is the time where we go into our fast questions.
I was waiting for that.
So I want you to give me the first thing that comes to mind, okay? All right. What is your favorite word?
Shit.
It's always either the word or the sound. Someone always gets me on the first one. What is your least favorite word?
Oh, you froze for a second. What was that?
What was your least favorite word? First thing.
I can't. Is that a word?
I'll take it. Okay. I'll take it. That's good. If someone you would trade lives with right now, who would that be?
Denzel Washington. Because then I don't have to work as hard.
Right. At that point, all you got to do, you're just casted by the call up. Okay. All right. Waffles or pancakes?
Waffles.
Right. All right.
More room for syrup.
True. I never thought about that one. All right. Director or producer?
Producer.
Okay. What is your favorite sound?
Ooh, birds chirping in the morning.
Ah, that's awesome. Okay. And last but not least, heaven is real. You get up to God. What would you like to hear him say to you?
Mission accomplished, my child.
Hey, there you go. That was a great way to finish. And so I just want to do a little short spotlight for you. This is what I like to do at the end of the interviews as we wrap things up. Go ahead and address your audience and leave them with a word of inspiration and motivation. Spotlight is on you.
It's not how you start, but it's how you finish. And just because you had a late start doesn't mean you'll finish last, because you always have the motivation and courage to pass up the first spots and get there. But it's a marathon, not a sprint, and we could do it. I believe you. Let's get it.
Amen. Let's get it. That's Omari Washington. I'd like to thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for everyone who is tuning in. Big shout out to AfterBuzz and Black Hollywood Live. Inside Black Actors Studio, we are back. We are here. The conversations are continuing. Please look out for Gracefully Broken. Congratulations again for 6 awards, 12, like all these film festivals. I absolutely love it. I love seeing Black people do their thing. Black King, you're amazing. God bless you, and go ahead and tell everyone where to find you.
You can find me on Facebook, Omari, O-M-A-R-I, Washington. You can find me on Instagram, same thing, Omari Washington, all one line. You can find me on YouTube, Omari Washington, IMDb, Omari Washington. I think that's Omari Washington.com.
Yeah, Omari Washington. Not Denzel. Omar knows. Folks, thank you. You can find me everywhere at I Am Daniel Royce. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next week, same place, same time, inside the Black Actor Studio. Stay safe.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.